You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When I was in high school, nobody else fly fished. I was the only one, and I had to keep that shit a secret. Like, you don't brag about how good of a fly caster you are in high school. That gets you nowhere, okay?
I know what
now,
you mean.
Now, they've got fly tying clubs in middle school, and I'm like, when the shit did this happen? I'm Nick Davis, I'm the owner of 239 Flies, and this is the Tom Rowland Podcast.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast today. I've got a great guest for us. Nick Davis runs 239 Flies in Bonita Springs. We have a number of mutual friends, and everybody tells me this guy's really funny. So we're going to find out. I hope he is. But anyway, Nick is with us. Nick, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I can barely reach the bar now for the expectations that have been set for me by others, but I'll try to get there today, Tom. we'll try to get there together.
Well, funny is a high bar. That's a high bar.
You know, I'm still waiting for it to pay off in life, but you know, it'll get there. We'll get there.
So you've got this shop going. How does this happen? Because from what I hear about you, you got an interesting story. Firefighter.
Yeah.
So how does the shop play into this?
So the shop, kind of the origins of the shop here. I used to bring my fly tying stuff with me to the fire station, because like when you're at the fire station, you've got, you know, you're there for 24 hours. You know, so after you get some work done, usually there's some chores or some busy work that needs doing. And like later in the day or in the evening, like you're just on standby. Like if shit hits the fan, you got to go deal with it. But otherwise, you're just on house arrest until 7 o'clock the next morning. So I bring my fly tying stuff with me. And instead of watching TV or, you know, just kicking it, I'd get my flies tied for, you know, the next shift or next day. Or so I didn't have to waste my time at home, you know, doing up the stuff that nobody really wants to do. I mean, like, it's fun and all, but like, you know, so I bring my fly tying stuff with me to work. And my good buddy, James Ross, was like, dude, let's, you know, was just getting into building websites at the time. And he was like, let's build a website and sell your flies online. And I'm like, you're on glue. Like, nobody buys flies online. Like, and besides, like, fly fishermen tie their own flies. That's part of it. Like, like if you fly fish, you tie your own flies. And if you don't, like, you just suck at it. Like, and this was back in like 2012 when, you know, like selling flies online really wasn't a thing. Social media wasn't really a thing. I mean, like, Instagram had started and Facebook had started, but, you know, I don't even know if Twitter was really taken off by then. You know, he stayed on me for about 6 months, ruthlessly making fun of me too, as a 24-year-old that, you know, fly fished and golfed, like quite possibly the oldest soul ever. And a 22-year-old, like, why can't you just be normal? Like, tequila shots and, you know, but so he stayed on me for about 6 weeks, or I'm sorry, about 6 months. And, you know, finally I was like, so what are we going to do here? Because, you know, you're not going to fill out a tax form and I'm going to spend 3 to 5 years in a minimum security resort, you know, because you didn't mail a check, you know? So he's like, dude, just tie the flies, leave the rest to me. And I was like, all right, fine. Like, I'll tie the flies, you do the rest. Like, if the IRS comes knocking, like, I'm telling them I'm you. So, like, enjoy prison, asshole. So we got it started. We took
some pictures. Expecting to sell a lot of flies.
I was expecting to sell zero flies, not a single fly, you know. And that was part of the whole thing, how he was able to convince me to do it, was because he's like, dude, if you just do this and, you know, we don't do anything and, you know, we don't sell a single anything, you can just, you know, write your hobby off for 3 years. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds like federal prison to me. That's not, like, I'm way too soft for that shit. Like, I can't go there, dude. Like, I can barely hang in the fire station. Like, you know, like, his hands were not calloused back then. Certainly the soul was not. But so anyway, we got online. Nothing really happened. He put a website together, and back then there was no Shopify or, you know, any of that jazz. Like, he wrote a website line by line, you know, with code that he taught himself.
Wow.
How to do. Like, it's too damn smart for his own good. But yeah,
this guy's line a by fireman. Line, like,
yeah,
he's one of
yeah,
your fire yeah. fire buddies. Okay.
He could probably. I got another couple of good stories about him, but yeah, he's one of the guys I work with at the fire station. Actually, got hired the same day with. We started our careers in the department the exact same day. Hmm. And little backstory on that: when we took our CPAT together, in the CPAT's the candidate physical ability test, and you take that for whatever county it is that you're applying in. And for Lee County, which is where I work, there was, I don't know, 3,000 people taking this written test, all jam-packed into, you know, Mariner High School auditorium. And out of 3,000 people, I sat next to that asshole, James Ross. Like, I'm sitting there, like, I'm cheating off of this test. Like, I'm looking at it like, so where do you live, dude? He's like, Pembroke Pines. I'm like, oh, where's that? So yeah, first day at the fire station, like, oh, they hired you. Like, oh, cool. All right. What are the odds of that? But getting back to the story, I like to get sidetracked if you can't tell. Like,
yeah,
I have
okay.
zero direction.
We got plenty of time, man.
Zero direction in life.
Plenty of time.
So we got the thing started online, you know, with the website that he wrote line by line, and nothing happened. 6 months, 8 months, nothing happened. Finally, we ran a little ad, old Google ad, and we sold like six flies. And I was like, oh my God, like, we sold something, you know, like 36 bucks later, you know, and it's like, oh my, like, I'm going to go buy a mansion. Like, I'm a business owner now, successful entrepreneur. And then later I started I'd go around like, to all the tackle shops in town. It's like, all right, well, online's not really working. So let's go try to pump these at like area tackle shops. And so I went down to a little shop called Cat and Pete's Bait and Tackle. Formerly Cat and Pete's Bait and Tackle, unfortunately, but met my good friend, Paul Nosefora there. I don't know if you know Paul, but Paul's about a 6'6", 320 pound, looks like he's in a biker gang, just like covered in tattoos, like not the guy you mess with. So I walk into his shop and I'm like, can I speak to a manager? Like, pure Karen. Like, can I speak to a manager, please? And he's like, yeah, speaking. What do you want? I'm like, shit. I got some flies. I got some flies. You guys sell flies? Like, his shop's like the size of, you know, it was 200 square feet, 300 square feet, like down the middle of Tin City. And he was like, yeah, I got some flies, but, you know, I'd like to get some more. What do you got? So I showed him my flies and he was like, yeah, I'll take a dozen of these, a dozen of these, a dozen of these, a dozen of these. And it orders like 10 dozen flies. And I'm like, well, shit, now I got to tie these.
Yeah, right.
So I'm like, all right, well that worked. So then as I'm kind of leaving, Paul's telling me, he's like, you know, after talking to him for a couple of hours and like, thrilled that he didn't like grind my bones to make his bread. He's like, dude, you should get on Instagram. And you know, as you're going with these, get on Instagram, take some pictures, you know, and see where that goes. I'm like, you know, you're right. So as I did that, you know, like I'm going up to the old world famous master bait and tackle here in Bonita Beach Road, kind of doing the same thing. And before I knew it, I had, you know, 20 dozen flies that I had to tie, you know, for no money, but, you know, like absolutely no money, but like I had 20 flies I needed to tie. Somebody wanted 20 dozen of my flies. So started taking pictures of it, got on Instagram, and then it just kind of took off. That was pretty much it.
Let me ask you something. Like when you say no money, like here's my history of commercial fly tying.
Okay.
It sounded like a really good idea to me. And I was going to try to spend the winter in Jackson, Wyoming. This is close to 30 years ago. And I guided all summer. And then when the trips, you know, just dried up, I was like, well, what could I do this winter? And one of the things was you could build houses all winter in 30 below. That didn't sound good. You could be a snowmobile guide, or, you know, maybe, I don't know, you could find some other job. And I thought, man, what I really want to do is I want to fish, or I want to do anything like fishing. So I went to the manager of the shop and I said, would you want to buy some flies? And he said, sure. And I said, well, great. How many would you want? And he said, well, if you could tie that Quigley Cripple, I'll take 100 dozen. And I'm like, 100 dozen, man, that sounds really good. So I just started tying flies. Mm-hmm. I never negotiated the price or anything.
Yes.
I just was going to turn out 100 dozen. And I was not a businessman at all at that point in my life. So I tie 100 dozen flies. I take them to him and he buys them for the price that he would buy them from Sri Lanka.
Yes.
And which is like, I don't know, maybe $2 a dozen.
I mean,
seriously. And I was so disappointed. I mean, I could not have been more disappointed. All that work. And I should have just said, no, I'm not going to sell these to you for that price. Yeah. But I didn't have any money. I had dug myself in this giant hole. So when you're doing this and you're getting started, how are you competing? Or, I mean, you say no money, like no money for you might not be no money for a Sri Lankan fly factory, right? Like,
yes.
So how do you even compete with that? Like, it would seem like your flies and your time that you're putting into this would be, it would have to cost 10 times more than
when
a fly
you are
is worth.
When you're buying your materials at wholesale, or I'm sorry, you're buying your materials at retail, and then you are selling your flies at wholesale.
Right. That's a bad combination.
It's a really bad combination. And I did this, Tom, for, I'll say at least 2 years.
Wow.
I'll say at least 2 years. You know, there's, and I knew what I was doing when I was doing it. Like you're building a base, you know, like you're working, and I mean, you're breaking even on them and you're working your ass off and you're barely breaking even.
But your break even is a little bit different. You're breaking even that you just paid for the materials. You paid for the expensive hook that you probably tied
it on, and
all of the other stuff. And now you're coming out like, well, I didn't lose any this time. Like,
labor is $2 an hour. And the sacrifice is a few days a week that I would, you know, be going fishing. But now I have an excuse to go fishing. At least going fishing is, you know, I can put gas in my boat, you know, with some of the profits from working my ass off for 3 weeks. You know, I can put 6 gallons worth of gas in my Hell's Bay skate at the time.
Right.
You know, with the excess profits of of the flies. But you know, like you're building a base, you're gaining traction, like you're gaining eyes, and you know, you have to kind of tie, and that's, you know, like nowadays, like you go on Instagram and like everyone's tying flies, they've all got them linked to their website. You can all order like right from your phone, and it's like, shit, I remember when I had to do this and I was like making 50 cents an hour, like doing this. And, you know, even honestly, after all of it, and that's kind of how it eventually, like it stopped, like 239 flies changed. Like I like to, I like to tell my daughter, I like to tell, you know, the kids that do it, because they always want to offer, they always want a piece of advice. Like, what would you say I do? And it's like, be open to change, because if, however it is that you're doing, you know, your fly tying business, you know, it's, you're going to have to change it at some point, and just be ready for that, because the technician work is going to, if you want it to go anywhere, the technician work is going to end, and you're going to have to jump to the manager's position or the owner's position. Like, you're doing all three as a small business person, but really you only enjoy the technician level of the work.
Right.
And if you want to work for $3 an hour for the rest of your lifetime flies on your spare time, like, there's nothing wrong with that. If that's what you enjoy, like, knock yourself out. But I don't know. Like, my time is a little more valuable to me than like $3 an hour.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Like, you're making $2 an hour.
Yeah.
And you're thinking,
on a good day,
man,
on a good day,
this is promising. Like, where's the next step?
The end of the tunnel.
Right. Like, where's the next step where you're like, okay, there's actually something to this. Like, what there seems like a big void there. Like, you're making $2 an hour, you're buying your stuff at retail. Like, how do you make that next transition to where you're now getting the eyeballs to look at your flies and want them, but what changes?
So my buddy who wrote a website from code and told me to do this whole thing was like, this needs to, like, we have to get somebody else tying the flies. And it's like, well, then it really kind of loses the mystique of it being us, because like, I was stuck in that role. Like, I enjoyed the technician work. Like, I was tying the flies, and you know, back then it was like, all right, I'll take a picture. You didn't have every, you know, Instagram algorithm that it hid your post from, you know, most of your followers. So like, you snapped a picture and like tons of people saw it. You're like, holy shit, those are awesome. Like, oh, thanks. Like, tuna melts my heart, bro. I appreciate it. But you know, he was always saying like, you have to get somebody else tying the flies. And I was like, well, that really kind of loses the, you know, the mystique and the, of it being, you know, custom hand tied, you know, flies by, you know, a little redheaded kid down the street. He was always kind of, James was always very much like, next step. And it took me 4 or 5 years before I could actually like see where the next step needed to be. But you know, I would work my ass off for, you know, $2 an hour, $3 an hour, realized that there was no end to this in sight. And okay, well, at least we have to start selling these flies retail and at least double our profit on them. Instead of selling them to, you know, my buddies for, you know, $3 to sell in their shop, I got to sell them online for, you know, $6. And now I've got, you know, a couple thousand people that I can do that with. And really started kind of pushing that. And like, hey, like, what do you know? That worked. All right, cool. And then, you know, from there, it just kind of evolved with like, all right, well, I'm spending too much time tying, you know, one of this and one of this and one of this, and getting all the materials out to tie one of these is too time consuming. I need to, like, this shit's got to get put away. Like, we got to tie a dozen of these, or like multiple quantities of these in a row, so that I can tie 4 in an hour instead of 3 in an hour, 2
right.
in an hour.
Right.
So like, that was kind of the obvious next step at about the, I'll say year 3 mark. You know, like, and like, we close the website down, we get caught up on orders, you know, and then we change, like, it would change. And we did this for the first, I'll say 5 years. Yeah, I always get confused. Like, we actually looked it up one day, like, and found out the timeline of everything. And I put it on the table here just to be safe. Like, I have it established 2012. Erected 2017. That way, if I ever get confused in the timeline, I have it right here on the table. Really coming in handy right now. But I'll say about the year 3 mark, it was like, we'll shut this down. We'll come out with, we'll do multiple packs of flies, and we'll sell them 4 at a time or 6 at a time, and, you know, raise the price of them a little bit, because we're too damn busy. Like, we have to kind of limit, we have to kind of control the quantity going out here. We have to curb demand.
Let me just be sure that I'm understanding. You're still firefighting at this point, right? This is still all in the spare time. Okay.
Yes, this is still all in the spare time. And so we would do that. And we, you know, I'd say we tried that cycle twice. where we'd up the price of the flies and we'd increase the quantities of the flies that we tied. Well, by 2016, 2015, you know, I was really far behind. We had some really proprietary patterns that we were selling a lot of. And it was like, you know, it'd be a lot easier if I could show people how to tie these flies and they could tie their own. Because I had plenty of people asking me, like, so how do I tie this fly? And, you know, super secret, you know, squirrel shit. Like, no, I don't, you know, I'm like, I'm not going to tell you how I changed that epoxy from clear to, you know, like, I'm going to keep all that myself. That way I can keep doing all this damn work, you know? So, you know, you kind of kept the secrets to yourself there for a little while. And then you kind of realized, like, well, this is dumb. For every person that's buying these, you got 15 that want to make them.
Yeah.
So I got with my videographer buddy, Pat, you know, who at the time was in high school, and his uncle, Nick Sergio, who is, you know, those are like my area best friends, and they were huge in getting this whole thing started. So I didn't understand the importance of professional photography or videography. But I knew that, you know, like a lot of people were, I knew that if we wanted to put something out, I wanted it to be better than what was out there at the time. And there was a lot of, you know, GoPro videos on fly tying, and there was a lot of, you know, iPhone 3G fly tying videos out there. So it's like, well, you know, fly fishing's expensive. Everything about it's expensive. Like, this should be top notch. Let me get a professional videographer, or someone who's aspiring to be a professional videographer as a junior in high school, and get them to, you know, produce a fly tying video, you know, and then I'll just sell the materials to tie the fly. Like, I'll show people how to do it, and then I'll sell them the materials to do it.
Like in a pack, and like you could tie a dozen, like you give them like 12 hooks or something like that. And then
like in a DIY kit. Yeah, I'll tell you what, okay. I'm not even going to supply the hooks. You tie them on whatever damn hook you want. I'm just going to sell you the,
seems
I'm
like that'd be where the profit fly is right there, man. And the hooks, that's the most expensive part.
That came in about year six.
Okay. All right. We're jumping ahead. All right. I like the story so far though. This is really cool. It reminds me of another one we're going to talk about.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right. So we, so that kind of offset the me working my ass off all the time tying flies is now I can package up materials and ship them out. And I've got this DIY video on my website. Here's how to tie a lightsaber pinfish. This is what you want to tie. Like, I'm tying, you know, 4 dozen of these things a week, 5 dozen of these things a week. But now you can tie them yourself. Here's an easy step-by-step video, and here's all the materials you need to tie a dozen. God,
that's genius, man. Because, you know, I'm just sitting there thinking about, like, my father-in-law is a great example. Before he moved to Florida, he's a guy that would just dream about fishing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure, 100% sure that a lot of the people that are buying that kit and that video may never use that fly. But
maybe
they want to tie it, and they want to sit there and basically meditate over this, thinking, yeah, I would throw this out and I would do this with it, and it's going to look like this and it's going to be this way. But they would never tie that fly if they only had to get one, because they got to buy the bucktail, they got to buy the different hook, they got to buy all these different materials, and they just want to tie the one. That's
when you say
genius,
meditating. Well, thank you. I didn't grasp how, or, you know, what kind of an idea it was at the time. This was just a way to, you know, give my fingers a little bit of a break.
Yeah.
So, however, once this caught on a little bit, you know, we quickly saw the importance of this. So, I ripped down, or I got some slot wall, and I turned my spare bedroom in my house into my fly shop.
Yeah.
And I put up, let's see, 16th there, about 72 square feet of slot wall in my spare bedroom, and covered it in materials. And I didn't ask, I didn't know whether or not Hairline made you have a brick and mortar location to sell their stuff online. And I knew that Wapsie did, but this was like one of those things where it's like, all right, you know what? We're moving along so hard, so fast. Like, we're just going to do, like, we're going to beg for forgiveness. We're not going to ask for permission. No. Like, fuck that. We're doing this. And if we get in trouble, like, what are they going to do? Throw me in like fly tying jail? Pretty sure I could beat those assholes up. Like, who cares? Like, I think there's only one of us crossfitting in that game, Tom. You know what I'm saying?
Tweed coats and pipe not smoke. Happen. You know?
Not happen. Exactly. Like, I like my lungs over theirs. So we just covered my spare bedroom in slat wall and stocked it full of everything that I was tying my flies with, and came out with, you know, eight or 10 other videos on, you know, the other patterns that I was doing. And, you know, I was spending so much time packaging up the DIY kits that I didn't have time to tie the flies. And we moved the flies to, you had to buy a dozen of them, and they were, you know, $120 a dozen, and they were still coming in faster than I could tie them. And it was like,
how does that compare to what the kits were doing?
Oh, the kits were semi easy, but they were also a pain in the ass because I was doing it all on, the kits were doing really well, but I could package up a kit in 10 minutes start to finish.
Right.
And I've got, you know, $20 that I'm making in that, you know, in that time.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, to tie a redfish Ritalin, I got to sit there and I got to tie three of them or four of them before I make, you know, $20. Well, right. That takes an hour.
Right.
Right. You know, that takes an hour. So it was like, okay, this is getting real clear as to what needs to be done here. Like, I see the direction of this company. But you know, also like while this is going on, you know, our Instagram page is following and our website's picking up traction. And, you know, like we're getting more than just fly tying questions. We're getting, hey, I want a rod. Hey, I want a reel. Hey, what fly line do you use? There's, you know, like there's people that, you know, are asking non fly tying questions. And, you know, I got it pretty quick that it was like, okay, like, so we need, you know, we need some of this other stuff because like, this is like selling like DIY kits is cool and all at $40 a pop, but you know, selling a Nautilus NVG for $1,100 would be a lot cooler. You know, mm-hmm. Like we could get into that, but furthermore, like what was fun about it, honestly, Tom, like the funnest part about it is there was people that didn't fly fish that were getting into fly fishing and fly tying. And we were growing the sport of fly fishing in this little area. Yeah. Like I always kind of joke about it. Like, Chris Humphreys, who's a marine biology teacher over at Barron High School, and was actually one of Pat's teachers and Evan when he was in school. But regardless, when I was in high school, nobody else fly fished. I was the only one, and I had to keep that shit a secret. Like, you don't brag about how good of a fly caster you are in high school. That gets you nowhere. Okay.
I know what
now,
you mean.
Now they've got fly tying clubs in middle school. And I'm like, when the shit did this happen?
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden golf is the cool sport to play and fly fishing is the cool thing to do. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like it took me 15 years, but I finally became the coolest kid in high school. Like it just happened. I was 28 at the time.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. Like I was pissed about it. I'm still pissed about it. But so we went to an after school fly tying thing at you know, they have a fly tying club at Barron now because that's, you know, fly fishing is, like I said, the cool thing to do all of a sudden. And, you know, like, Chris has got 14 kids in the fly tying club. And, you know, like you're going around, you're like, you know, do you fly fish? You're like, yeah, I'm getting into it. Yeah, I'm getting into it. Well, now they're all fly fishing superstars, you know, like, yeah. This was 6 years ago, 7 years ago, but, or, you know, actually, I guess it was, I'm looking at my table again, 5 years ago. But, you know, like it's just, it's taken off. Like more people are doing it. They're realizing that it's, you don't have to make $1 million a year to do it. You don't have to, like, there's affordable equipment, and it is as productive as fishing and artificials when it's not blowing 40 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Like, you can beat up a shoreline with a fly rod faster and more efficiently than you can beat up a shoreline with a Mirrodine. Like, you just...
Well, it's just kind of interesting that a lot of the ways that you can bring somebody into something is through kind of a back door, like fly tying. Like, that might be somebody that wasn't interested in fishing at all, but they might be kind of artsy or craftsy or, you know, that looks kind of cool. And, you know, I got a little time on my hands, and this seems like a kind of a cool place to do this. My parents told me I had to join a club, so I might as well join this one. And then it's like, you know, it's kind of like,
exactly.
Huh, that one looks pretty good. And then they get, you know, maybe their fly looks the best out of the whole class, and they get that reinforcement. And then all of a sudden, like, this is something that they're kind of interested in. And then it's like, you learn, like, oh, well, this is a pinfish. Never seen one of these before, but apparently the fish really like them because it's a bait fish. And then you start seeing that they're learning this whole, like, the whole ecosystem. Like, oh, mm-hmm. This is a fish that bigger fish eat, and this is what it would do, and this is how I'm trying to do this.
These shrimp are way easier to tie than these bait fish. I'm just going to learn about these shrimp and crabs now.
Whatever, but it brings people in, and sometimes those same people might not have gotten into fishing, and you know, in a couple of years, they might decide that fly fishing is not cool anymore, and they just want to catch some really big fish, and they want to, you know, now they want to throw the cast net, you know. It's like, okay, I see. Like, but there was an entry point. That's what I think is kind of cool. But what I really think is cool about this whole story that you're telling is that you took something that basically anyone would have looked at and said, oh my God, like, you could not have picked something where you make less money for you know what? It's like,
literally could not have been dumber about how you got started in this.
I know, but I love it because it's like, now wait a minute. Like, if you told this to a business guy, he's like, hold on. Now, how long does it take you to make this?
Exactly.
And it's like 45 minutes. And you sold it for how much? $3? And how much does this hook cost? And how much does this cost? And how much does this tail cost?
$2.99.
And it's like,
combined.
You literally made a penny. Like, at least you're making something. But well, hang on. Let me show you this other fly that I lost a dollar on. Because
exactly. Because I was afraid to charge somebody $6.50 on it.
Yeah. But what I like so much about this story is, I mean, what I talk about on this podcast so often is like, people following their passion. And a lot of times it's something like this. Like, it's a path that any rational, sane person that has any business knowledge would look at and go, whoa, that is, don't do that. But what changes though is creative thinking and somehow doing it differently than it's been done before, and somehow offering it, you know, it's like fake left, go right kind of thing. It's like, it's almost like you could compare it, you know, and this will be quite flattering, but you could compare it to like an Amazon or something, to where it's like,
oh my God, that was flattering. Give me a warning next time.
Yeah. No. But it's like, you know, you start selling books online. It's like, what are you doing? Like, nobody wants to buy books online.
You can find any book.
And it's like, you're a bunch of nerds. Like, nobody's going to buy this. I mean, how many books could you possibly buy? And all the while he's like, but I'm doing it differently, and I'm creating this thing. And, you know, he has the vision, but I just think it's kind of cool because there's this other story, and I've been trying to get this guy on the podcast, and your story kind of reminds me of it a lot. And you might even be able to learn a little bit from this and take what you're doing right now and expand it.
Okay. But
there's this guy that makes bamboo fly rods, right? So a bamboo fly rod is unbelievably expensive. Like, there's so much time and effort and material, and there's so much that goes into that. So they have to charge like $2,000 a rod. Well, meanwhile, you know, you've got Chinese rods coming over here, and they're basic.
You can
copies.
Buy a totally decent fly rod for
really nice
$250.
Really nice. It was really so nice. Much better than what we were fishing with 10 years ago. And it's $200. And you can have a good line with it and a good reel and everything. So why in the world would someone want a $2,000 bamboo rod? So, you know, as technology improves, as all of the world starts to change, things, handcrafted things, sometimes go by the wayside. Like, I mean, a bamboo rod cast kind of nice. It's got an interesting feel to it. But what do you want to pay $2,000? If you break it, it's over. You know, what are you going to do? You got to build another tip. I mean, you got to go back to the drawing board. Like, why would you want to do that? You can buy this rod for $200. It's got a 25-year guarantee. It casts better than that rod ever will. I mean, it's so much better. But there's something about the craftsmanship. There's something about this. So anyway, this guy.
It's the process.
Yeah. Well, this guy figured out that more people wanted to learn how to build a rod that may never cast it ever than ever wanted to buy his rod, even though he's a master craftsman and his rod is literally one of the best in the world. And so he started putting together these rod building classes. And he would charge, you know, like, it's like, okay, I'm going to charge you, I don't know what it costs. Let's just say it's $2,000. And you're going to go and you're going to build your own rod. I'm going to show you how to do it. You're going to build your own rod. And instead of taking his time, maybe it took him, let's say it took him 2 weeks to build a rod and he would get $2,000 for that rod. He's got 20 people paying him $1,000 to be in this class. And all of a sudden, he's doing better than he ever could. And from what I understand, I haven't had this guy on the podcast yet, but from what I understand, his classes are completely sold out. And he, you know, he would put more people in there, but he ran out of room. So it's an interesting thing. It's like people, like a bamboo rod is obsolete, basically. But the building of a bamboo rod is something that a dad wants to do with his wife or with his kids, or it's something that, you know, somebody has always wanted to learn, and that rod might go above the mantle and it may never be fished.
Yep.
But this guy tapped into this market.
It's funny. Like, I'm pretty sure I know the manufacturer you're talking about. They're in Blue Ridge.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
I was in Blue Ridge.
Oyster.
And I was in Oyster. And that's, there it is. They're in Blue Ridge. I remember walking by the sign when I was in Blue Ridge, and they had all their classes on a chalkboard out front for like the next 3 years, and they were all full.
Yeah.
And I remember walking by it going like, what the fuck's the point of the sign? You're booked for the next 3 years. Like, just take the sign inside. And I was like, well, I guess I'm not doing that before 2023.
Yeah.
But no, that goes to show, like, I would love to get into it. I believe it's Bill Oyster, I believe is his name.
Yeah.
I would love to take Bill Oyster's class just to do it. And you're absolutely right. I would never throw that rod.
Right.
I would have it sit in my house. And I just, like, I can't do that soon enough.
but you could do something similar to that. I mean, like, you're on that track, like that creative thinking about putting the stuff together with a high quality video and then selling these things as kits. That is on the same kind of thinking path as he was on. And maybe he stumbled into it. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know how it happened. I want to know. I want to have him on the podcast. I've contacted him. We were putting it together and then it fell apart. But I want to know how that happened, because that's really genius. Like, you can take something where there's another guy out there that's been that making bamboo fly rods has been in his family for generations, and they literally make the best ones there. But just fewer and fewer people want them and it can't make a living doing it anymore. And they quit. Whereas a little bit of shift in mindset, a little bit of shift in creative thinking takes that. And it's like, well, it's kind of the same business, but it's different now. It's like, now we're doing these classes and it's all it takes is that little tweak. And all of a sudden you found a diamond in the rough. Like, I think that's so cool. And
that's, it's I found this, and this is, and I don't know how Bill's story is going to differ, but I found that it wasn't necessarily the flies that we were tying or the, you know, I'm a very mediocre fly tire. You know, I found that, you know, our secret sauce was in advertising. You know, like we could, it wasn't that the flies that we were tying were superior to anything else. Like you can go pick an EP, you know, perfect minnow off the rack and go catch anything that swims in the Gulf of Mexico. And, you know, like every single one of those is tied perfectly where they're not going to foul. They're not too bunchy. They're not going to float because they've got too much material on it. Like our fly tying recipe wasn't the secret sauce. It was the advertising of the fly tying stuff that was the secret sauce. People enjoyed the process. You know, I want to break from, you know, my 9 to 5 and I want to listen to this asshole, you know, like cuss into a microphone and tie flies for an hour before I go to bed, because this is what I want. This is how I relax. Like, I don't need to watch CNN or Fox. Like, I need to just tie some damn flies. Like, I'm going to join along on the live stream and, you know, we're going to do this together. And that's exactly it. Like, if I tie flies for somebody, I'm making one person happy. If I get 40 people in here on fly tying night and, you know, we've got, you know, sandwiches and drinks and there's a party going on in here. Well, now all of a sudden, like we got 40 people having a kick-ass time, you know, and now they've got something to look forward to next month. And that's a big part of it. Like, yeah. And it's, you have to be able to change. And that goes back to, you know, what I was saying to begin with. It was just like, whatever you are day one, it's going to be different than what you are day 101 or day 1001, and be ready for that change and embrace it because it's going to be different.
It's interesting. And one other thing that's, I think is kind of interesting with this new world that we're living in, where you have social media and you have all of these other abilities to connect with people, is that, you know, if you're short-sighted or conventional thinking, let's just say, not short-sighted, you're just not thinking this way. It's like what you said in the very beginning, like, why would I want to teach someone how to tie these flies? Then I'm not going to sell flies. Like, my business is selling flies. Why do I want to teach someone how to do it? And it's like, that is a hard concept.
Sucks.
That's a concept. That's a hard concept to get your mind around. Well, that could be whatever. Like if you're an auto mechanic, why would you want to teach someone how to do something as good or better than you can do it? Then you lose a customer. Well, maybe you do, or maybe that guy gets really interested in cars and buys 10 of them. And now you have to be his private mechanic. Because he now understands how an engine runs and he's more into it. And oh, that's really cool. Wouldn't it be cool if I had one of these kind of cars? And, you know, he's heavy in the wallet. He's got money for that. So what we were talking about was how interesting it is to start thinking differently about any business, like any business. And the fact that I think that you're, you know, like when we talk about, like, you know, I know you do a lot of training as well. You do CrossFit, and we've talked about that a number of times. And one of the things that I like the most about training is that it's a good analogy for life in so many situations, in so many ways. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, you show up and there's this massive workout on the board. And it's like, damn.
It is on your board, not on mine.
Well, I mean, whatever. You show up and you're just like, dang, I don't know. Like, that looks really hard. And then it's like, okay, well, if I just did two at a time, I could make my way through that. You just chip your way through it. Mm-hmm. And then you can apply that to different things in life. You can be like, oh, well, I've got this massive amount of yard work to do or whatever. And it's like, how am I ever going to get through this by myself? Well, I'll just, you know, do what I can for the next 15 minutes and see how far I get. And then, you know, and you directly applied the same lesson that you learned in the gym to something in life. And a lot of times the lesson that you're learning in the gym is like an extreme lesson. right? Like it's an extreme. Yeah. Well, you put yourself
it hurts
in like
extremely much.
Yeah, it hurts.
But you've
put yourself in this extreme example of challenge or whatever. And then you apply that to life and it's like, well, you know, you could look at it two ways. You could be like, well, if I can do that, what I did this morning, then I can certainly do this. Or you could just say, well, I thought I wasn't going to be able to accomplish something and this is how I did it. And let's try to apply that over here in a business sense. So you can take these extreme examples of challenge or whatever and apply them to life. And that's one of the things that we do in the gym. But like what we're talking about here is an extreme example of literally being able to make a penny, like we talked about, like it was the worst possible path.
Mm-hmm. I mean, exactly.
It could be considered.
Not make less profit.
Right. But if you apply the same principles that you're learning there to any business, you could possibly open up these doors that you didn't even know existed. Like, exactly. I just love it that you were able to think differently and do something that really no one or maybe other people had done it. It doesn't matter. It worked for you.
We did it differently. You know, whether or not, I don't know if anybody else had done it or not. Quite frankly, I hope that somebody had, because it wasn't that difficult. I mean, it was time consuming and it was exhausting and, you know, I don't want to send you the wrong idea. It wasn't easy. It cost me a lot.
Sure.
But at the same time, like it's extremely rewarding. Like if you're in it for the profit, if you're in it for the paycheck, like you're not going to make it past the first year, right? You know, like you have to be vested in it beyond a paycheck. You know, we didn't make out, and James and I had thousands of hours in 239 flies before we drew a penny of it, you know, before we took a paycheck on any of it. Honestly, it was last year. You know, we had the fly shop open before we took anything of it. And, you know, I remember being at ICAST when we had opened, and I was talking to a lot of friends and a lot of people that were like, oh yeah, you know, so-and-so used to own a fly shop, or, you know, yeah, this is, you know, so-and-so he owned. And it's like, these are all past tense. And what's the lesson here? Like, what did, you know, he's like, yeah, you know, I had to fly shop for about 5 years. And then, you know, we just called it quits. And I was like, well, what happened? And he was like, honestly, if I could give you one piece of advice, I can't tell you, you know, what happened, but make time for yourself and take a paycheck from it. Because if you don't make time for yourself and you don't take a paycheck from it, it's going to turn into work and you're going to get burnt out and you're going to be done with it. And that's what happened with me. It was too much work. It was too little money. And I wasn't able to do the things that I wanted to do. And I was like, well, that's strangely good advice, you know, and from someone who this didn't work for. And, you know, as you kind of dive into, like I have no business training, like formal business education whatsoever. I graduated high school, went straight to EMT school, went straight to fire school, got hired. You know, couldn't really mess around too much in my 20s. You know, found out that I was going to be a father at 19. Still don't know how that happened. I swear, I have no idea how that happened.
They should have paid more attention in biology class.
Love you, kiddo. It's funny. I was leaving the house this morning. I was like, I got to go. Don't burn the place down. She's like, what did you forget? I'm like, I forgot to set my alarm last night. And you forgot to remind me that we're not doing anything this morning. She's like, don't turn this back on. She's 14 now. So I didn't really have time to screw around too much in my 20s. I had to go straight from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. And, zero business training, zero business education. And it's been a lot of figuring out as you go along. And that is one thing that I think we have figured out as we go here is that, some of the processes and the theories that we thought worked or needed to work, do work. So for instance, I knew that when we opened the fly shop, it couldn't depend on me because I work at the fire department and I'm not leaving medical benefits and a pension to pursue this, regardless of what level this got to. This place could not depend on me. And I couldn't work it because I'd work at the fire department 10 days a month. So like, we're not going to, our business hours aren't going to revolve around my fire department schedule. And I'm certainly not going to man the cash register for 6 hours a day, every day I'm not at the fire department, you know? So, you know, we learned really quickly, this can't depend on me. Okay. Well, who can it depend on? Well, it can depend on, you know, a few area guides who, you know, need a part-time job and, you know, need a place to get more guide trips. All right. So let's get some guides. You know, called up a few of my buddies. Hey, looking for guys with, you know, people skills, personalities, and that we can turn into cartoon characters at the fly shop. Oh, call my buddy Casey. Or, you know, I already had my buddy Evan, who, you know, is Pat, my videographer buddy, area guide. It's like, okay, like, perfect. We need young guides with personalities. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what we need to man this popsicle stand. And it worked. Like, all right, cool. So we started out with Evan. We got Casey. Casey's older brother, Daryl, same boat, guide, wanted more business for trips, needed a break in the summertime to be able to sit inside the AC, tie some flies, mm-hmm. and you know, be involved in something like this. And then fell into some college kids, just hired another guy who fishes a little north of here, Cody Pierce. You know, so, and all along the way, like, we all have this cast of cartoon characters that we've, you know, kind of, you know, painted the picture of. And like, these are now the people that the fly and shop mom, like, we got Sharon, the shop mom, who turns our fly shop into an Abercrombie and Fitch every Saturday. Like, you know, these are all the components that the fly shop can depend on, because they'll be here 2 to 3 days a week. Whereas if I was never here, this thing is still going to work.
Right.
And, retail can be a drag, you know, it can really be tough at times. You get 3 or 4 days in a row of just, you know, the crowd that wants to walk in and beat you up, you get real burnt out. So it's like, we need to rotate people through. Like, this can't be anyone's main gig. This has to be everyone's, you know, part-time. I do this because I love it. And, you know, I want to do basically what I did, which was, I want to start my little thing and grow my little thing and use this as the platform to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I always joke, we've got, you know, we're open 7 days a week. Not even Chick-fil-A can say that. And, you know, we've got 2 people on all the time now, but make no mistake, nobody works here, you know,
right.
Like, nobody works here. Sharon's retired, shows up every Saturday. We got a couple, you know, we've got six employees that, you know, 4 of them are guides, 2 of them are college kids. And, you know, I just, you know, show up whenever and, you know, like, all right, cool. I haven't burned the place down yet. Awesome.
Well, that sounds like, you know, you're kind of flying by the seat of your pants, but I got a feeling that you're not. Like, how do you insert all these different people? Have you come up with some really good, like, processes? Do you have like an employee? Have you documented everything that people are supposed to do? Like, so that when you throw a new kid in there, they can read a little book.
We have some systems. You know, it's difficult. You know, like, have you ever read The E-Myth by chance?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So book club,
my good buddy, my E, right? So, yeah. I don't know if you know this name either from being in CrossFit, but my good friend, Jason Ackerman, mm-hmm. I don't know if you know Jason or not. He was in CrossFit before CrossFit was cool, but he was a member and a coach at my gym for a long time. And we became good friends. We still are. But he recommended, he's like, you should read this. Like, he always got on me because I don't read. Like, I'm not a very strong reader, Tom. Between you and me. but you know, and that was one of the, after reading that, that was one of those things where it's like, okay, this makes sense. No wonder why we've been successful in this part, because, you know, like, it kind of put words to some of the, you know, shit we got lucky doing, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this not depending on us. Well, it can't depend on us, because you can't be the technician, you can't be the manager, and you can't be the owner all in the same role. Like, these need different things. Mm-hmm. Like, the technician can't own the place, and the technician can't manage the place, you know? And that's how small businesses start out. You get somebody who's, you know, successful in the technician role and wants to take on more and do more.
Right.
And come to find out, like, they're not successful in the manager role and they're not successful in the owner role.
Yeah. That's one of the hardest things, man. I tell you, I mean, like,
that's why small businesses last three days.
I know a lot of small businesses don't last for a couple of reasons. You pointed out a couple of really good things. First of all, you have to make money. Like, and a lot of people, like, especially people that are pursuing their passion, that sounds wrong. Like, it sounds wrong to them. Like, oh, you're just all about the money. And it's like you take a pay. This is one of the reasons why I think Elon Musk is such a genius, is because when you read his book, he's like, well, we're going to make the Tesla and it's going to be this and it's going to be that. And it's going to, you know, be all these great things. But he said, one of the things that it has to be is profitable. It has to be profitable, because if it's not profitable, it will go away. I can only do this for so long. So it has to make profit. So we have to make it expensive, and we have to do this in a certain way that this is a very profitable business. And so a lot of people look at that and they're like, ah, man, you just took all, you just sucked all the fun out of it. It's like, well, I mean, that may be the way you think. You lost me again. You got some crappy earphones, man. we're having some technical difficulties with the Amazon special headphones. Something tells me those aren't Apple.
There we go.
Are those Apple headphones?
Yeah, they are.
They are?
Yeah.
They must have put out a new set, because they're sending the virus your way. That
it's bad.
Mine don't die that fast.
Mine die like instantly. You know, like, James has been on me for a month, like, dude, you know, 6 months now, like, you need some new AirPods. I'm like, these work fine. Like, no, the batteries die in them, you know, in 15 minutes. It's like, yeah, but I only work out for 12 minutes. So, like, I'm good.
what we were talking about was like Elon Musk demanding that his business be profitable. And a lot of people that are pursuing their passion are like, nah, you know, that just took the fun out of it. Now it's just like any other business. But it's like, I mean, like, if you're going to be a fishing guide, you got to figure out a way you're going to make some money. You got to charge what you're worth. You have to charge enough to where this is a sustainable thing. Otherwise, you're just wasting your time. And so that's one of the things that you said early on, that you got to take a paycheck. That's why a lot of these fly shops failed, because they were just grinding and grinding and grinding themselves into nothing. They might have continued to do it if they were showing any sort of profit, but it's like, man, I just can't lose money anymore. Like, at some point you have to make it sustainable. It has to be something that you're not just pouring yourself into with no opportunity to have it continue. That's a really important thing. And then the other thing that was really important that I thought that you just said was the fact that people can't do everything, because that's what people do in a passion activity. Like a fishing guide is a perfect example of that. He's the guide. He's the booking agent. He's the advertising agent. He's the photographer. He's the videographer. He's the editor. He's the writer. He's the receptionist. He's the calendar person, the trip booker. He's on the advertising arm. He's going out and selling trips. He's doing all of these things. He's the boat washer. He's the bait catcher. He's the fly tire. He's the casting instructor. And it's not like every business can have individual pieces of this. But man, where you can hire that out or not do that, you have to.
That expression, the jack of all trades, master of none, comes into play real quick. It's like, if you have to be good at all of these things, like, you only have so much that you can, you only have so many cards that you're handing out. So if you're going to put all of them in the fishing guide category, then all of the other categories are going to take a hit. If you want to be better in all of the other categories, then the guiding aspect of your business is going to take a hit. And that is kind of why we, you know, like I mentioned, like, we try to make this as much as a franchise as we can, just so that when we get somebody new in, we can say, all right, here's how you do your job, you know, and it's cut and dry. And we can take anybody who doesn't fly fish or doesn't have any experience in retail and plug them in and you're good to go. But we're not there yet. And it's always going to be, you know, people person dependent. And our vetting system now is pretty strenuous. We've got a hell of a vetting system now. I'll put it to you that way.
Well, that comes straight out of that book too. I mean, that book really made a big impact on you, because as you're talking about this, I'm remembering that book more and more and more. And there's all these, you know, these opportunities to bring on a new employee and how you present, like, this is how you do your job. Well, the only way that you can do that effectively is to have it documented and written down, and you have an employee handbook. And when I read that book, we started doing employee handbooks for every job that we have, even if I'm doing five jobs. How do you do a podcast? Mm-hmm. This is exactly how you do it. And write every one of these things down. First of all, it reminds me of how I can do it. And then maybe I'll come back to this document in 2 weeks and go, that seems like an awful lot of steps. Like, is there some way that I could get rid of these two that I really don't like, or whatever? But that documentation is so important. And it's funny, because yesterday I was talking to somebody on our team about the documentation. And a lot of times if you go to an employee and you're like, I want you to really document every single thing that you're doing here, that's almost like, I'm about to get fired. Like,
yeah, exactly. Uh-oh.
But I found something else. I was like, look, I'm sure there are parts of your job that you really don't like to do. There are things that maybe you're not even good at, things that are taking you a long time. If you document these things and you write down every step and you create a perfect handbook, it is so much easier for me to take that off your plate and give it to somebody else. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to not do this job, this part of this job that you really don't like, the way to do it is not to protect it. The way to do it is to get that information on paper so that we can take that off of your plate and put it on someone else's plate.
And who is good at it and who does enjoy doing
it. Exactly. And so that is like extreme ownership. I'm sure you've read that book too, right? If you haven't, you should.
Of course I have. Extreme ownership. I got that. Actually, it's in my truck.
I got it on tape. Place. Yeah. Well, you can get it on tape. But anyway, extreme ownership is about Jocko Willink. And it's one of the best books that I read last year. And it's all about taking ownership of where you are. Like, you lead up and down the chain. So if you don't like doing a job, then you need to do the best job you possibly can to help your boss or the person that's ahead above you to replace you in that position. So if you wrote a perfectly executed handbook and you said to whoever you need to talk to, look, so-and-so over there, this is perfectly within their skill set, and I think that they would enjoy doing it. I'm happy to take on some of their responsibilities. Here's a perfect handbook that all they have to do is go down these checklists, and you could pass this off. Oh, all of a sudden the operation's running smoother. Everything's running better. I don't know. It's kind of a
here's the proof positive of that system right there. You know, a little bit of backstory. One of my best friends, John Robertson, is general manager of a couple of restaurants here in town, a couple of resorts here in town. But most of his career thus far, he's like the bar rescue guy, just without a TV show. Okay. He opened Mortensen Steakhouses in, you know, throughout the country. And his job was just to go to each new chain and get it running, get it operational, get it profitable, move on to the next one before landing here in Florida. Super interesting guy. But he kind of echoed this stuff to me, you know, as I was reading that book and I'm bouncing stuff off, like the ultimate manager. Okay. Like just a master manager, if you like, amazing. You know, he was telling me, he's like, you can't have people run your fly shop. The systems have to run the fly shop. The people run the systems. Like that's how all of this works. Having the guidebook or having the employee handbook or having the system or whatever on paper is good, you know, but like that's what runs your fly shop, the book, not the person, the book. You know, we're lucky because, you know, we only need at the moment 6 people to run the fly shop. And so we can, you know, handpick the best ones that, you know, fit our, you know, group of cartoon characters and give the shop the personality that it does. But, you know, that's what it is. Like we have all of these we have all of these different characters that run all of these different systems that all have strengths and weaknesses. And, you know, just the other day, like we have, I hope he doesn't get pissed at me for saying this, but Brian Eldridge is one of our new employees, newer employees, who his roommates with one of our other guys who's been here for a little bit of a time. His name's Brian Butts. And Brian Butts is an absolute rock star. Like, he's 22 years old, can fly fish his ass off, amazing fly tire, better caster than me, better fly tire than me. I don't want to say he's better looking than me, but it's close. But I like, and just could just sell anything. I mean, he's like a duck in water when it comes to selling shit, and it's incredible. And, you know, part of this whole, this fun thing for me is the challenging part to me is like, okay, how do I get this fly shop to where I can make this into a full-time career for Brian Butts to manage, you know, because that's what it is. Like, Brian Butts is going to go off and get a real job somewhere, sometime when he's not a college kid anymore. I need to have this fly shop and this operation ready for him to manage, to be a real job and to be a real career by the time that happens. And, you know, I noticed that maybe 3 or 4 months ago. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. It was like, you know, we ran out of space in here. Every hook was full. And for as much as I could figure out, we just can't do anymore in here. Like, we need a bigger space. Well, if we need a bigger space to get more stuff, it's safe to assume that, you know, our business is going to keep trending up. Like, we're going to continue to increase sales, especially with the increase in products. Okay. So I'm going to grow this on the owner side of things. I can say, like, okay, this is where we're going to go from 750 square feet to 2,400 square feet. We're going to triple our inventory and we're going to get more aggressive online and in store. But with those giant increases in, you know, in products, we're going to need increases in all of the systems that go into managing those products and the managing of the sales of those products and the customer service of the customers. This all needs to be handed to Brian Butts and, you know, and one other person if need be. And coronavirus was actually huge on this end for us because the shop was closed during that, you know, I want to say we were closed for about 45 days. We closed 2 weeks before the mandatory shutdown. And I learned how difficult it really is online because I was the only one I wasn't the only one, but I, for the majority, 90% of the online orders that came in that 6 week time, it was me packaging them up and shipping them out. And I realized really quickly that the systems that we had in place to manage this year one are nowhere near what they need to be, you know, in year three. You know, we needed to make some changes and I couldn't see how badly we needed to make those changes until I was the one that was packaging up every order. So, you know, it's like, okay, well, we can do that. I can make these changes on the ownership end of things. And then as far as managing them, like, we need to have that person, that 40 hour a week guy who's here, you know, Monday through Friday, who's got his finger on what's happening because, you know, we do 20 orders a day plus. Shit happens on Monday. By the time Thursday rolls around, and you know how fast fly fishing operates, like the entity of fly fishing operates, like it's stuck in 1992. And it's infuriating.
I was kind of wondering where you're going with that because I was like, I kind of know how fast it moves, like super slow.
Yeah, we've got that in stock. We'll ship it, I'll say Friday at the latest. Like, I'm sorry, it's Monday. Like, you have that in stock? What are you doing right now? Hang up the phone with me and go ship that to me. Like the fuck are you doing? Like, extrapolate that through, you know, 50 vendors. Like, it's incredible. But like, that's what we need. We need to have that person here who can say, like, okay, I know we ordered this on Monday. It's Wednesday. It's still not here. UPS is one day shipping in the state of Florida. We should have that. Let me get on the phone. Let me make that phone call. Like, we learned that pretty quickly. So, you know, it's still fun from my perspective is like, we're not done growing. There's still a lot more that we can do. Like, this shop is done. We can't do much more with this space, but we're looking for a bigger space. We're in talks now with, the landlord trying to actually moved two doors down into a 2,400 square foot space. You know, before COVID, that was super easy. We signed the letter of intent. It was good to go. But now it's changed a little bit and we're just trying to get back to that. But if that doesn't happen, like, we'll just stay put for another year and go look somewhere else, you know, but that's the next step, a bigger space, you know, and that's where we're going. And that goes back to the, you know, to the, you have to make a profit. You have to pay yourself. Like, there has to be fruit on the tree if you're going to go prune it and take care of it every day, you know, otherwise you're just like, fuck that tree. I don't really like, just cut the damn thing down. You know, I'm tired of looking at it,
right?
You know? So I think that's where we're heading. And I like it because there's definitely a need for a fly shop in this area. And, you know, fly fishing in general is, you know, in my opinion, it's stuck in 1995. Not a lot of these companies are getting with the times and moving forward. And, you know, we run into that problem every day where it's like, just, hey, can you send me that tracking number? Like, why do you need the tracking number? Like, we have the tracking number. It'll get there. It's like, no, this customer wants to know where his package is because he also has an Amazon Prime account. You right. know, like this is yeah. like, it's not that we're competing with Amazon Prime, but we're competing with Amazon Prime.
No doubt.
Everybody who sells anything online is. And, you know, when something is, you know, as I don't know if this is the right word, with something as bespoke as Able Reels, it's like, you know, people don't mind spending the money on an Able Reel. It's just, you know, it's a custom product and it takes 4 to 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2020. I want that yesterday.
Right.
So, you know, our answer to that is, well, like, we're not going to be able to get Able to make reels faster because Able's trying to figure out how to make reels faster, but we can have more reels in stock. You know, we can have 15 custom reels in stock and have a better chance of having the one that you want in stock. And then you don't have to wait 4 weeks. You don't have to wait 4 days. I'll just take it out of my case and send it to you.
Right.
You know? So, you know, that's our answer to that, but that requires money because you got to buy that Able reel to keep it in stock and then sit on it. So that gets back to the business has to make profit.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, all of these things are, it's fun as hell. Like I enjoy the growth end of things and actually, you know, seeing what more this little tax evasion scheme could be than tying the flies, you know, like now it's the preseason orders on the Excel spreadsheets that have me pulling my hair out. But like, that's now fly tying, you know, for me.
Right.
And it's cool because we've got, you know, Brian Butts who enjoys the fly tying end of things, and he'll sit here and I'll turn the live stream on. It's like, here, you tie, like, you entertain the masses today. I'm going to get this done, you know? And then you know, the guys that enjoy the fishing end of things and the growth in the clients, it's like, we got our guides for that. Like, you want to go fishing and take pictures and do that and make people smile holding a redfish? Like, cool. That's on you. You know, John's going to be here next week, you know, he's coming in from Wyoming and he is stoked about it. So,
you know, like, that's cool, man. You've built this nice little business in a time when nice little businesses like yours are going out of business all over the place. And I think that it just seems like it's just different thinking. Like you're not selling anything differently. I mean, you're selling it in a different way. You're packaging it and marketing it differently, but you're selling the same stuff that another shop is going out of business, that's sitting on that stuff and can't get anyone to come in. I see it all the time, man. Fly shops go out of business all the time. So the fact that you're, you know, thriving in a time when that's not the case is super cool. So, man, kudos to you.
Well, thank you.
Good thing that you came across that E-Myth book. That is one that has been it's on the book list. I got another book I'd love to send you. I've sent it to two or three people that I've interviewed on the podcast. It's a small book. And even if you read like perfect. I do, you'll be done with it in the afternoon and then you'll turn around and you'll read it again. I promise you, you will. But from so many of the things that we've talked about, I want to send you this book. And for everybody that's wondering what in the world that book is, I've talked about it before. It's a little book. It's a tiny little book called U Squared.
I hope you're getting ready to tell me it's like the Cat in the Hat or something.
Well,
like,
it just would
like
be.
Drop that
it,
on
it,
me.
It kind of is. I mean, you will burn through it. and it's called U Squared, and it's a it's just an interesting book, man. I mean, I read the first page and I was like, wow. I mean, I couldn't believe what I was reading, and it just makes you think a little bit differently. I'd love for you to read it and check it out.
I'm in. I would love to.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good place to cut this out. So why don't you tell everybody how they can find 239 Flies and follow you and do the live streams and buy your kits and support you in any way that we can.
I appreciate it. So 239flies.com. We are on the wide, wide world of web. So that's spot one. We've got a Facebook page, 239 Flies on Facebook. We're on Instagram and Twitter at 239 Flies. We are trying to get off my ass a little bit and do more Instagram content, but like, it's just been so ridiculous the last little bit. Like, when you're tying flies, it's easy. You know, you've got, you know, that was when Instagram was the funnest, was when we were tying flies all the time. And it was just like, all right, here's what I tied today. I had, you know, six or seven different like stock, you know, I'll say poses that I was going to do with the flies. And it was like, we'll just rotate through these. And like, it was so much fun. They all look so good. And now that we don't do that anymore, it's tougher. And I don't want to be just like every other fly shop and post pictures of clients with fish. Mm-hmm. So, we are on Instagram. We're a little less active on some of that stuff these days, but we do more stories and we do more, live streams. And we're still trying to do more, but, and also we're at the, you know, 3431 Bonita Beach Road, number 205 in beautiful Bonita Beach, Florida. And we're now open 10 to 6 Monday through Friday, and 10 to 4 on Saturday and Sunday. And one more little thing. We're getting ready to do, we're getting ready to take off on more classes and experiences here at, 239 Flies. I don't know if you know a gentleman by the name of Joe Mahler and a, lovely young lady by the name of Captain Debbie Hansen.
Okay.
Captain Debbie Hansen took over the radio show here in town. There's a, radio show on Saturday mornings from 7 to 10, called Real Talk Radio. And she's the host of it now, after Rob Modi's retired. But they're going to start doing classes here at the shop. Now they're going to do casting instructing. They're going to do some fly tying classes. They're going to do, you know, basically the, like, I love throwing parties. Like, that's what I love doing, but I mean, there's not too much instruction in the fly tying parties that we throw the last Wednesday of every month. So, and like, I know that I'm not great at the fly casting instructing and the fly tying instructing, but they're phenomenal instructors and they're going to do the instructing. I'm going to do the partying. But we're getting ready to do some of that too. So, I'll have that up on the website. That's kind of new, like this week. Haven't even said anything to anybody yet. So cat's out of the bag on that, but yeah. That's how you get a hold of us.
Flies.com
is the best way to go. So,
all right. Well, that is awesome. Congratulations on all your success. And, I know that there's more to come because you're thinking the right way, and that's super cool. So that was Nick Davis with 239 Flies in Bonita Springs. Go check him out on all his social media and everywhere that he just said that he's available, and, he's doing some really cool stuff. Very cool. We had such a good conversation that we didn't even get to the meltdown in CrossFit. That's on the next show, I guess. But Nick, thank you very much, man. It was great talking to you. And that's it for this show. We'll see you next week.